On the International Day for Elimination of Conflict-Related Sexual Violence, we now extend our conversation to some of the key stakeholders who will explain to us how South Sudan is tackling the matter. Well, I'm joined by the Deputy Head of British Embassy, South Sudan, Gil Lever, a career diplomat whose previous postings include Romania, India and Japan. Her last role before coming to South Sudan was Head of Overseas Health and Welfare for the Foreign Commonwealth and Development Office in London. And I'm also joined in the studio by the Non-Violent Peace Force Program Manager, Adeng Lik, a human rights advocate. Her previous positions include that of Executive Director for South Sudan Women's Empowerment Network, Officer with the African Union Commission, Technical Committee Member for the Establishment of the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing, Deputy Chairperson of the South Sudan Human Rights Defenders Network, and Chair of the Human Rights Cluster. Well, good morning, ladies, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Irene. Thanks for having us on the show this morning.
Right. So as we observe International Day for Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict, this matter remains a reality in South Sudan. Why is that so, Lever?
Well, thank you. Thank you for asking, Irene. So first of all, I wanted to do what we call a trigger warning. So I want to warn your listeners that some of whom may well have experiences of conflict-related sexual violence, that talking about this sensitive topic might actually include some distressing content. So it's important to let people know in advance so they can make decisions about how best to look after themselves.
So
the reason why this is a very important issue in South Sudan is that we've continued to see high levels of conflict-related sexual violence since independence. It's not that it's a new thing, but it's a thing that's continued and has escalated. And last year, for example, there were 380 cases of conflict-related sexual violence in South Sudan, more than double the previous year. That is largely to do with the big drivers of conflict that we've seen in Unity State, where we're still waiting for the government to issue a report on what happened there, and to a less extent the events in Warap. So this is a very big issue that affects men, women and girls, but also, as the UN SRSG said earlier on, affects men and boys as well.
That's right. And Adeng, would you like to jump in?
Yeah, the conflict-related sexual violence, we have seen it had been happening every time there is conflict in the communities, and it becomes like a source of a way of revenging, and always women use as a tool of revenge, and it has actually been continuously happening, but the issue of underreporting and also not taking this issue seriously and the policies not implemented, it has become a culture.
Right.
So this conflict-related sexual violence, if we don't tackle this issue properly, we might have communities or generations that might end up being angry or even raising more conflict. So it is very important, the conflict-related sexual violence, the elimination is very important for South Sudan if we want to end up in a peaceful and peaceful coexistence society.
Right. Well, Adeng, which part of South Sudan has the communist CRSV in the country?
Wow, it's very hard to point a finger exactly, but you find Unity State, and also you find Upper Nile and part of Jungle States. Let me say, like, most of the states in South Sudan, specifically the bigger location where there is presence of military.
Right.
So it is very, like, it becomes a common thing every time there's a conflict in that area, you find that there's a conflict related to sexual violence.
Right. Yes, Lever, what do you think needs to be done to tackle this problem?
Well, just to add to what Adeng said there, just for a moment. So what we see happening in South Sudan is CRSV using as a weapon of war to break down communities and families. So I think it's often a misperception that it's driven by lack of command and control over forces. But actually, it is used quite deliberately to reward fighters where pay and food might be absent. So important that everyone understands that. And that, you know, government forces, as well as, you know, forces more widely that may not be any sort of structure, continue to be significant perpetrators. So it's really important that we see the government of South Sudan take action. You know, we have seen the government take some action, which we're grateful for. So they've made a number of domestic and international commitments to tackle CRSV, including a preventing sexual violence in conflict conference that we held last November. On the joint action plan that the government have signed, there are a number of commitments there that the government have made data across all forces, the SSPDF, the SPLMA, IO, and now the necessary unified forces have made commitments. So this, you know, speaks to the leaders of South Sudan and what they've committed to. It's about training their service personnel to increase their awareness, and some progress was made on that, so that they understand the issues and know how to respond to CRSV and raise awareness in the population. Accountability, absolutely essential. We must see accountability for troops and senior leaders, again, who are using CRSV sometimes as a weapon of war, and using military courts to hold perpetrators accountable, including at the highest levels, and providing justice for survivors. So important, accountability. It's stopped perpetrators in their tracks. And then providing protection and support to victims and witnesses and judicial actors. These are very important things that the UK is involved in supporting, working with Adeng and others across civil society, and indeed with the government as well.
Right. So Adeng, where does education and empowerment of the public with knowledge of their rights and available resources fit when preventing and responding to CRSV?
Yeah, there's different ways of doing that. You can see that most of organizations are trying to handle the one that was become an issue was the sexual violence. And then we have realized that the big warning is the issue of conflict-related sexual violence. So the women organization, the civil society, is trying to support survivors by providing them with services. And then it comes to the issue of the limited services that we have in the country. Even giving the priority to the protection of the survivors, even giving the services, be it the first aid and all this, the follow-up after the victim has gone through this kind of atrocity, you know. Yeah, you find that the civil society also is running behind the issue of implementation of policies. Even the passing of policies or the bills, it becomes a concern to the civil society. Let me give you an example, like the anti-GBV bill. Like, people have been calling for it to be returned, to be reviewed, and also to be passed afterwards. Because punishment needs to also go hand in hand. The penalties need to go hand in hand together with the policies, so that we'll have the kind of society that the justice is prevailing, and the civil society is trying its best, and those are my colleagues from the civil society. They're trying their best to bring justice to the survivors, right. And not to forget, we have different mechanisms in the peace agreement that the civil society is also trying to push, that it should be handling the issue of conflict-related sexual violence. Not to forget our partners, whether the donors or the partners are supporting to stop this kind of conflict-related sexual violence. And that's how we have seen in November 2022, we went to London for the conference on the prevention of sexual violence, and we have realized that a lot of people are facing the same issue, you know, all over the world. And this action that the government have signed is supposed to be, you know, implemented, and the civil society should go hand in hand with the government to support this implementation. And this is definitely this is how the things can work, and this is how we'll have peaceful society.
Right. Thank you so much there. I think now, Liva, would you like to jump in on how education and empowerment of the public with knowledge of their rights and available resources fit in when preventing a CRSV?
Well, look, it's a very important issue, raising awareness so people know, you know, what conflict-related sexual violence actually is, you know, knowing that they will be protected and have support to raise the issues. And then, you know, if they've been victims, to kind of have support for bringing their perpetrators to justice, and support for their health and welfare is very, very important. And again, we're working quite closely with Adeng and others on this, and have done a number of different activities on preventing sexual violence. Again, you know, in our conference in November last year, we started to provide resources and tools to countries to help with exactly this, including something called the Murad Code, which is about how people can give evidence and collect evidence in a safe way that protects the welfare of the individuals who are coming forward. So there's a huge amount to do still in this space, but we're very active.
Well, thank you so much. And Adeng, what challenges does the civil society organizations face fulfilling their function as civil society?
As a civil society, sometimes you find that you have ideas that you want to put in place to bring and to eliminate this conflict-related sexual violence. You put your proposal together, your concept note together. You might find funding to such a program or project, and then you find sometimes there is maybe resistance from the community, or even there is some kind of unseriousness from the parties to implement, because you have in place there is activities that needs to be done. You go to the community, give them an awareness and all those things. Then when you go to the community, you find that there is a mistrust, because there are some people who have come before you and talked about the same thing,
right.
But we are still seeing that the rights are not given back. We are not finding justice and all these things. So those are the issue, like implementing the policies, even implementing the laws becomes like a barrier towards what the civil society is putting in table, or towards what the communities are willing to support to end this, to eliminate maybe the conflict related to sexual violence.
Right.
You find in the communities that when people are perpetrated against, for them to get justice, it becomes a problem for the policies to be in place. We have nice policies in place maybe ending sexual violence. We have NDQPV that is coming. We have like some laws that is punishing the sexual violence, but you find that even the legal institutions sometimes find it difficult to pronounce or even announce the law, the punishment to the perpetrator. Maybe the perpetrator is powerful, and it becomes an issue for the community to trust again. So it becomes issue of mistrust and so on. And on the other side is the issue of funding too, because some fundings are limited to some certain activities, but I've seen that there is serious consideration of the conflict-related sexual violence. So the communities and the civil society and the government should sit together and see how they can tackle this issue. And also the lack of awareness among the actors, it becomes also an issue. Like you find an actor that might not even be aware, it's not aware what is the conflict-related sexual violence is, because some people might have the ignorance, like they are in the military, will be in the fight, and then they just use women as a weapon of revenge, okay? And then sexual violence are happening, and then they are not aware that they can be punished.
Right.
So it becomes like a culture when the laws are not implemented. Also, when the perpetrator is not punishable, and I always say it becomes a culture, and it becomes very normal for them to keep perpetrating and also doing the same thing all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
And speaking about awareness, I think, what three key things does civil society want the people of South Sudan to know about CRSV?
The key things is that CRSV is a violation and is a war crime. That's one. And secondly, it is actually a war crime is punishable by law, international law, not only the national law. So if you are perpetrating now and everything is happening, and then things are happening all the time, by the way, there is a record. You have seen ICC always call. In the conference we had ICC, and we have even heard how the conflict related sexual violence can be, you can be punished for that. As you can see, even some people had been going through trials. They never expected that, because they thought that the conflict related sexual violence is a norm. I mean, it's a normal thing that can be done, and then they find themselves in the court. The community also should know that they have the role also to protect their own people from the conflict-related sexual violence. We have the local government, we have the commissioners, we have the governors. They're supposed to protect their people from the conflict-related sexual violence, from the perpetrators especially. And then the third one, I want also the community should know that there is, when the conflict-related sexual violence happens, the result comes as a children born out of sexual violence. And this one will create a group of young people that might be wounded, who do not know who their father. And I say this is a very sensitive topic, and we should be aware that you can listen or not to listen, but it is a group that, it creates a group that is wounded, and we will have a country that is wounded, and we will never have peace. I'm saying that, and I'm so much in emotion, because I imagine how those children are going to turn out. So, yeah.
Right. Indeed, we share the same sentiments there, I think. Gail, As we wind up the interview, how do CRSV rights fit into the ongoing peace agreement implementation, particularly on the transitional justice?
Yeah, well, this is a very important point, and we've got lots more work to do on this. And the government did hold a transitional justice conference about a month ago, but there's more to be done on conflict-related sexual violence. And we already talked about the action plan, about how that needs to be renewed soon by the end of this year. That's a very, very important commitment that the government have made, so that we can mainstream sexual violence considerations in security arrangements, which is a big feature of work for the government at the moment under the peace agreement, do more on external communications and outreach. So if we allow subnational violence to continue, we're going to see the continuation of conflict-related sexual violence. So bringing peace to the provinces is really important, and that speaks to the peace agreement and what it's designed to achieve more widely. Mm. I'd just like to take the opportunity to reflect also on the words of the Archbishop of Canterbury and also the Pope and the moderator who came in February for the ecumenical visit. As you know, their exhortation to us all, to the government, to the people of South Sudan, was to end violence, gender-based violence against women. So I think we need to recollect that and take those words very much to heart in South Sudan.
Right, ladies, thank you so much for your time.